welcome to the latest episode of Fire Pro Podcasting. It is the week of September 14th, 2005. Sounds close to the end of the year. And we are the top podcast to discuss who is your favorite muscle character. As always, I'm your host, Brad, and here with me is Brian Rose.
Hello, everybody.
And Dan Forte is also here.
Hello, guys. I'm coming from 2015. I don't know about the rest of us. 2015, where I'm at.
The future. Think about it. Flying cars someday. I see Back to the Future cartoon. I know what it's like, man. You ask me anything. Want to know who's going to win the 2000 World Series? I have a problem.
Did you know that Jetsons was set in the year 2002? I think it was that year.
No, it was like 2065 or something.
Oh, was it?
But before we start talking about that and getting way off topic, a couple new things. And you know what? I am lazy today. So, Dan, why don't you just tell us what's new and exciting with the podcast?
Well, the best thing about this podcast is, one, you got to hear it last week and this week, we have a wonderful new intro and outro from a fellow by the name of Jason. You all may know him as @Oansun, OANSUN. You can find him on Twitter. You can find him in various places. Made this wonderful song for us. And the other thing that's really exciting, guys, we're on halfguarded.com now. We moved up in the world.
Yay. We're
rubbing shoulders with giants now. So.
Yeah. The giant of 20 Liter and Mike Hoffman. They are the beast of the internet world. Yeah, so more places to view our content. Not view. I guess you can view. You can look at it, too. But more so, you use your ears. Hey, man, I made that new logo last week.
You can do that.
I use my greatest skills. You can look at that. That's more important. Look at my, like, Zelda flyer and some, like, fancy wording that makes the podcast seem more fancy than it is. That's also important. But yeah, we're brand new, everything, different spots. You can view us, yes, of course, on halfgutter.com, and we'll still post everywhere else you're listening to our RSS feed. Nothing's going to change there. But yeah, just more places to view the podcast, and hopefully, maybe for the people that are just doing this now, hello.
And my goal for the next week is to try to put this on iTunes. I've been trying to figure that out, but that'll get sorted this week.
Apple's out to get us. You know, Mike Coughlin is a legendary bad boy of the internet, and they're just trying to keep all of anyone who rubs shoulders with Mike Coughlin off of iTunes. But we're not going
to
let
you have to keep it. You know, iTunes is, Apple is, they're very controlling. One of the kind of the big important things is this week we're actually going to do what we promised and speak about video games. Now, when we first started, we actually kind of thought, hey, we can just go through the entire history of games. But then I looked on things and I looked at my wrestling game collection and I'm just like, maybe not. I don't think we can do the 8-hour podcast. I don't think anyone really is ready for that. I don't think we're that big in the world yet. We're not Serial or the Trailer Park Boys podcast that high up on the list. So we're going to kind of skip it a little apart. This week we're going to deal with the ones we know of the 2D wrestling games. Before, there's not a lot of news going on, but we got a couple things to talk about. So Brian, why don't you just give us a rundown on what is important in current day?
I guess as far as wrestling goes, you know, this is one of the slowest weeks I can remember in some time, but, you know, this weekend is like one of the biggest in a long time because, I look at the schedule right now and it's like, we have a Road to Destruction show, another one. There's been two of them in the last couple of weeks, and I guess it's all building towards the Destruction shows on Wednesday, next Wednesday and Sunday. And those will be big shows. And we also have, it's not Nia, is it Nia Champions? Right?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, Nia Champions. Yeah. That's Sunday. Headlined by, I think it's supposed to be headlined by Sting and Rollins, or it could be Rollins and Cena, you know, who knows. And we also have the big CMLL show, which is also on Saturday. It's on iPay-per-view for, I think, $10. and that will be headlined by La Sombra versus Atlantis in a mask versus mask match. That should be really interesting. It should be interesting to see who unmasks and who doesn't. I mean, it could be either guy at this point.
Yeah, I'm interested into watching some good lucha because that AAA show.
The bar is low.
I would not be surprised if that wins like worst show of the year, and if Matt Striker wins like worst announcer of the year just on that show.
That would be fair.
New Japan. Oh, sorry. What was that?
No, I just meant it was gonna be hard for Striker not to win that. That announcer, worst announcer, but man, that's not fair.
And that was a rough one. There's a lot of actually New Japan shows this week because when they do like their Destruction Tour around this time. So there's the show this weekend, which is the Makabe Ibushi for the Open Championship, and then the week after is the Goto Nakamura for the Intercontinental Championship. So that, I think the Kobe one is probably the big one for me. But there's some decent matches on this one as well. There's an Anthony Tower match, there's a couple of Bullet Club matches, and Kushida versus Kenny Omega for the Junior Heavyweight Championship, which is, I think, is going to be the best of the show. So that's going to be interesting too. And yeah, like you said, Night of Champions is this week where we may see Sheamus as the champion.
Who would have thought of that ever being possible?
I'm not. I want to see him win. Same win, even if it's for 5 minutes. But yep. I've, you know, no reason to get too much into it right now because I'm not going to set myself up for failure.
Yeah, so
much to cover on these wrestling video games. It's amazing how many wrestling video games have been made, especially because they don't seem to make many of them now. And so you kind of get tricked into your head thinking there's only one of those a year, and then you go, no, there used to be tons of these things.
I think some of that can be attributed to two things. Wrestling isn't as popular as it used to be in both North America and Japan, and the video game industry has changed rapidly since the 80s. I mean, there used to be a bunch of games out, and now in terms of like big publishers who would release these games, today there's very few games out per year by big AAA publishers. I mean, you'd only get like maybe one or two per year now, as opposed to like the back in the 80s or 90s when there would be, I guess, like four or five.
Yeah, games are just more expensive as well, and also like the Japanese wrestling isn't as big, and that's where a lot of those things come from. Before, like even if you're speaking like the late 90s, there were multiple companies kind of fighting over licenses, things like that. I mean, if you look at 99 especially, there was like four or five wrestling games out just from the WWF alone. So
yeah,
it's different.
And the thing that's like totally gone now is that there used to be a day where if you didn't have a system, you just didn't get that game. You know, like, and like a license would be out. Like WWF would have a completely different game for the Genesis, for the Nintendo, for the PlayStation, and or you know the Nintendo originals, you know the NES or the whatever the what was it, the Mega Drive, the Sega
Master System.
Yeah, so like depending on what system you bought, there's just stuff that you could never play. You know, unless you went over to somebody's house, and that doesn't happen anymore. It's you know they put every they might give one system a head start. Like I think the new Tomb Raider game is going to be out like a year before on Xbox, but that's about it.
They're still exclusives, but it's not like it was back in the day where you would play one version of a game and then another version would come out later and be kind of different. I mean, when the Tomb Raider comes out for PS4, it's probably going to be the same game.
Yeah. It's just like the Xbox people got it first.
Yeah. I mean, exclusive games are done differently now than back in the day. A lot of things are done differently.
And today, most of the exclusives are like, Sony made a game, so obviously it's just going to be on the PS4. Nintendo, obviously, makes their own games, and it's just on the Nintendo. But a third-party, you know, developer making an exclusive game for a system, that doesn't really happen anymore. So
no.
It was very common, though, back in the day. Yes, and it's because, like, the systems had wildly different capacities, like, is there anything a PS4 can do that the Xbox Xbox One can't do? I would say probably not.
Yeah, so. It's a little bit different, but I mean, yeah, it's just, I think it just, there's it takes a lot more to make a game. There's a lot less creative freedom, and just things aren't, it's not as popular as it once was, especially in the Japanese industry, which is where a lot of the games, especially the ones we're going to be talking about today, come from. They're all like arcade ports or reskin games or things like that that have kind of come out now. And now, you know, there's one company, and they're very, you know, controlling what's going on, and it costs a lot of money to make it, so we're kind of stuck with one. And that's something we'll get into, you know, we talked about last week, and we'll kind of get into later when we look at modern stuff, but it's definitely a different atmosphere, for sure.
Thank you, EA, you bastards.
I think they went worst company of the year this year. I know they, if you check consumers, they've won like worst company in America like 2 years in a row.
So dumb. It's so dumb. That just shows like I hate that kind of. They just show the internet and has no idea. There's a difference from like, you know, like Nestle, like you know, marketing baby formula instead of breastfeeding, like to like African, like poor African mothers and like Monsanto. But you know what? EA can give, you know, charges you a couple bucks for DLC. No, they're the worst ones.
Yeah, but that's true. There are worse companies out there that do worse things.
It just screams of internet like whininess that just drives me nuts. But what also kind of drove me nuts is
if you think about it,
the game will kind of get you first. We're gonna start from early here. You know, I always think about, you know, the big, you know, rivalries coming up around, you know, in the 80s between, like, different teams. You know, you had, like, the Mega Powers and, like, the Million Dollar Corporation or the, what were they weren't, you know, they weren't, what were the team of Andre and Million Dollar Man? They were called, like, the Mega Bucks.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have, like, the Von Erichs and the Freebirds. And, of course, you know, you have the Rickies and the Strong Bads. And that's where we're going to start off here first. between these two teams who fight over and over 64 times in, of course, the 1983 classic game, which is the first wrestling game to be ported over to a home system that, you know, from the 8-bit era, and that is Tekken Wrestling, and it came out in 1983, and it came out a few years later, or a couple years later in 85, and then 80, I believe it was 87 here in the North American region, but yeah, tag team wrestling is
when it took a long time to get here.
Yeah, I know. I know, Dan. The first thing that you said before we started off the podcast was to rant at me for making you play this game. So, why don't you just kind of explain the details and why this is the best wrestling game ever made? Make it wrong.
So, like, here's one of the first things. Like, before I start, you know, I got an emulator hooked up so I could play some of these because obviously. It's going to be kind of hard to find some of them, but...
I have a copy. I'm looking at it right now.
But if you Google tag team wrestling or you search it into YouTube, one of the first videos that comes up is some guy going, worst game ever. So it's one of those.
Yes. During the early days of the internet, Sean Baby, who was really, really popular, I think he worked for like GamePro.
I remember his articles from EGM.
It was EGM, exactly. Yeah. And he was on the early days of the internet. He had like this website that was kind of big, and it just kind of shows my age. Even saying early days of the internet, it's so weird now. But he had a review of this game, and so I think this is where a lot of people remember it from, his like early 2000 reviews. So yeah, that's probably the review you're thinking of, and I think a couple of our, you know, a little bit of our older listeners probably do remember his articles if you were on there.
Yeah, so it's like there's a short list of, well, I guess there's a long list because somebody on the internet is always saying worst MR, but when you're going through the worst games ever, it's like it's ET, which some people are trying to now claim was good because that's the era we live in now.
No,
I mean ET is competent for really what it is, but. If you consider all the factors, it's not the worst. It's not even the worst Atari game. But anyway, continue about pro wrestling.
team wrestling. But there's this short list of, like, worst game ever. And yeah. Tag team wrestling just being on that list.
it's gives
you a little bit of an understanding of how bad this game is. It's obviously, like, it was made in 1983 originally, and that's the year this thing came out, and you can tell that they don't really know what the Nintendo, like, the developer didn't really know what this system was capable of, because it just looks like an Atari game with a little bit of, like, an extra sheen over it to make it look kind of a little bit better, but the background is pure-ass Atari. The graphics are garbage compared to some of the other games we're going to be reviewing from the Nintendo. Like, not... it's not as good as WWE 2K. Well, obviously it's not, but it's... And there's one thing that I noticed when we were playing through a lot of these games, the bad ones are always the ones where there's almost no grappling at all, where they just basically said, we're going to just have them punch and kick because it's a fighting game, right?
Yeah.
And that's what this game suffers from. I was playing on an emulator, so I guess, but it was a very difficult game just to play.
The way
you pick the moves is insane, and I just don't understand. I don't understand how this thing got made, to be honest with you. I don't understand. I mean, I guess maybe if they had 5 weeks, this was pretty good, but that's about it.
Yeah, it's actually, a lot of it's well known for having this weird style where when you go to grapple each other, it would come up with a list of moves, and you'd actually have to cycle through the moves. The gameplay would stop, and you'd have to cycle through the moves to go through it. I guess it was another game. There wasn't really a lot for button combinations, but even then, it's just even with the game tools, we'll even get to in the arcades a couple years later. It's just it didn't really work out very well. And really, it's kind of the only thing that's really known for is the name Strong Bad, which kind of made Homestar Runner, and that kind of came from all that.
Strong Bad is
from this game.
I didn't know that. It's really cool.
That's where it comes from. But outside of that, it's I don't think a lot of people remembered it. It took me a while to remember that. I probably rented it, but I got my copy even now. Like, a lot of
stole it from the rental place and they didn't care.
What's a lot about games now is I used to follow a lot in the collecting industry, but the collecting scene. I used to collect NES games years and years ago. The thing is, now it's really, really expensive. And nostalgia and big, like Angry Video Game Nerd and stuff like that, kind of made everything popular. And games have become insane, especially for NES games. This game I bought like a year ago, it was like $4. So even now, it's not known very well. So.
In a bubble market, this thing has bubbled up to $4.
Yes. And that was like $4 Canadian, which is like $1 million down there. But
I mean, for me, I never played the game. I don't.
You bastard.
You know, I probably should have for this, but for me, like the NES era of wrestling games, it's like it doesn't resonate with me that well. I played WrestleMania and King of the Ring, which I guess we'll talk about later, but.
Yes.
Yep.
Not very good.
No, not really. But beyond those two, I haven't played like anything extensively on the NES because I don't know. Some of the graphics are all right on some games, but gameplay wise, there's like nothing really to talk home about. Unless there's, I think a lot of people like pro wrestling on the NES. I think that's the one everybody likes the most.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit, but yeah, there's a lot of NES wrestling games, and the reason why you haven't heard of them, except for like three, is that they're like pseudo fighting games. Yeah, they're all pretty awful, but we're gonna go through each one of them because they're super fun. Like, in fact, you know what? The biggest problem, of course, with tag team wrestling, the game, is that it wasn't Japanese enough, so we need to get away from Data East and go a little bit to some anime, of course, with Tag Team Match Muscle. Now, once again, I'm going to explain how old I am. And I don't know if you guys were in that same era, but you remember those little muscle figurines, little small ones you got for a quarter? They were little small little wrestlers.
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what those were. Now, the funny thing about it, this is the game based on those little toys, and they were big in like the 80s and the early 90s. And they were little toys that you can get for like a quarter, and they were small little things. And they were based on anime, which is this one.
Okay.
Kimi Kumin.
Yeah.
It's about, like, it's like basically like Dragon Ball meets wrestling, which sounds really great, and in some ways it kind of was. But the thing was, the anime never came here. So it was just little toys, and of course they're going to make a game based on the toys. You might actually remember, because in later on there was a series that came out in like 99 that came out here called Ultimate Muscle, which was a sequel to that, to a series that never came out here. And in fact, the last game to use the No Mercy engine was a Muscle game, which we'll, I guess we'll get to in a little bit later. But let's talk about this game.
Those were the games that I was familiar with, because I was like, oh, Muscle, is it going to be kind of like that? And then, oh, God, oh, no, it's not.
A lot of people probably don't remember the name, because one, the thing, I never had the actual Muscle cart. One of the big things for the NES in the 80s and the 90s that you didn't really get anywhere else was pirate cards. And, yeah, you know, the 101, 50-1, 1,001, they went up and up, and most of them only had like 5, you know, had like 10 or 16 games, and they were all early era Famicom games. And this was always one of them. So if anyone who's listening looks up screenshots of Tag Team Match Muscle, you may look at it and go, oh, it's this game. surprise, surprise, it's not very good. The game doesn't have any grappling in it outside of doing certain special moves. Each person had each special move. There's about 8 different characters in the game, and there's a punch and a kick.
And they had no names. It's just like a weird compass of, like, top-down looking at somebody's face, and it's like, well, I can't tell who the hell any of these people are. Like, what am I even picking from? When we get to some of the other games, again, on the same system, what the story behind each character is like so fleshed out, and like they have the statistics behind them and all that. And then this game is just like, oh, pick this dot.
yeah, you get the dot. They actually did have names in the manual. Bustle, they all had actual Japanese names. They were all like, I have them up here, but I remember exactly what you said, where they didn't have names, and I named them. Like, you know, one was, the guy was, it actually turned to be Lips, but it was, I thought it was Beard, so it was like Beardo, and then there was like, Boy was another one. I was a kid, like I was like 7 or 8, so I named him, just names. But they actually had names and backstories in the anime, which of course we never got. Yeah, it was
always good when you make a game based off of a property that's not available in a certain country.
Yeah.
And but that's on Nintendo. You know?
Yeah, you're wondering why you never heard of that there.
I think the biggest issue is that there's nothing about this game that really feels like a wrestling game, other than it's in a ring, but they don't interact with the ring in a way that makes any sense. Like, everyone just hopping up and down, which would be like the equivalent of being able to jump 10 feet in the air and jump over people. And it's like there's nothing about the way a match happens in a ring that is translated to this game at all. It's just like there's a background that looks like a ring, and that's about it. And you can jump off the rope, kind of. You can jump into it and bounce off of it, and that's the closest you get to actually being in any kind of wrestling simulation.
Yeah. And that was one of the ways to cheat the game. In fact, that's pretty much the only way you could win. If you jump off the rope and keep hitting them, you could get them into a spot where they come close, and you just jump off the rope and you keep hitting them, and then they all had health bars, so there's no pinning. You just, they got knocked out, and then you jump like a moron, and then you'd be the winner.
And again, this is another game that looks like a really nice Atari game. If you're used to what the Nintendo can do, like, I mean, I grew up in the 90s, and my first game system was a used Nintendo, you know, when I was just like a little 4 or 5 year old playing video games for the first time. And so a lot of the games that I grew up playing were like those later era Nintendo games where like they were pushing the envelope of what that system could do. Mm-hmm. And this just feels like, this feels like going to my aunt's house and playing her Atari Centipede game, you know?
Like, I'm looking at these games and the crowds look really, really bad.
Well, yeah, the graphics
overall.
Certain amount you do, yeah.
I mean, like, they'd get it down for later NES games, but these earlier NES games don't look that great at all.
No.
Nope.
But, I mean, that was kind of what it was. You had the charm to it. And one of the big differences is that this was the first wrestling game to have multiple arenas. So you had the original arena, and then you had the ice arena, which you slide on. And then there was the electric arena, which I showed you this video before we started the podcast. But basically, so the wires, or the, not the wires, the ropes, using my imagination here, the wires, not. They would flash along with the lights. So you'd have high flashing lights, which is, you know, great for kids and stuff. I'm sure that's terrific. You know, we got a couple calls. I don't know.
And this was before games had the seizure warnings. Like, if you grew up playing, like, No Mercy, like, there was always that warning, hey, something about this might cause you to have a seizure. There wasn't any such warning on this game. It's just, hey, here's a sudden seizure.
Pokemon, that Pokemon episode didn't happen yet, so.
Yeah, that's why that you get all the seizure warnings today, because of that Porygon episode of Pokemon. That's never aired since.
Yeah. And I think that's where a lot of the seizure warnings happen, but yeah, it's, you know what, for the game, a game like Muscle, I think there's a little bit of, if you want to get like someone over and play it for 10 or 15 seconds, there's a bit of fun to it. It's really stupid. I think it's kind of stupid fun. Yeah, you get involved. That's sometimes we have, especially with those multi-card games. You play them for 15, 20 seconds, and then you go on to the next one, and you play Mario Brothers, except you had a mushroom at first. Those games were not very good. But let's move on a little bit to a game that's a little bit better, which is the first non-tag team wrestling game, just pro wrestling. It was one of the original Black Box games for the NES. That came out in March 87th. It's a bit of an important game because it was designed by the designer who would then go on to make the Fire Pro Wrestling games. And if you actually play the game, like we all did here, you kind of notice some similarities of that game. You kind of see where it was going here. It's known for the Starman, of course, which is Stardust's rival, and of course the winner is you. But let's talk about the gameplay first. Brian, what do you think about playing through the game?
Well, I mean, I haven't played it that much, so I don't know how I would talk about the gameplay. But from what I remember, I don't remember it being bad. I mean, I don't really think I could talk about it extensively though.
If you're a wrestling fan in the 80s, because I try to imagine that, because obviously, you know, if you're a kid and you're like, my parents got me Muscle because they know I like wrestling, and that was garbage, and then they got me this other thing, and that was garbage, but now this one's pro wrestling, and this is the most amazing game in the world in comparison, because, like, you're actually able to grapple, you're able to pick guys up and do some slams, like, fluidly, not without a menu screen coming up every time you want to do something. The models look amazing. You can see people's faces in the crowd. There's a referee in the ring. This is the first time that had ever been done in a wrestling game. There's a cameraman on the outside, so it makes this whole, like, it's like, oh my god, this is a real thing. This is a real video. This is real wrestling going on. And it had real wrestlers in it with fake names. So if you're a wrestling fan growing up and you're like, maybe you're an NWA kid, oh man, here's King Slender Ric Flair. And or if you're a WWF kid, here's Giant Panther, a.k.a. Hulk Hogan. And you're getting to play as something a little bit more authentic, a little bit more of what you would be watching on TV.
Now, was this like one of the first games where they did that? Because you'd see that in later games, and like a lot of later games where they would take a likeness of a character that you see on, like, in real wrestling, but they changed their name so to avoid legal issues.
Yeah, they kind of did that for all the games, but I think the Fire Pro Wrestling was this game by the same guy was kind of the first one to start it being really, really obvious. And in Japan,
and Inoki was in it too.
In Japan, the copyright stuff is a little more lenient. So you're kind of allowed to get away with it more here. I mean, there's a game a little bit later for, I think, Matt Wars or something like that, that literally had just Hulk Hogan on the cover.
I remember that one.
Yeah, and as far as that goes in Japan, like the original Street Fighter 2 had Mike Tyson in it with one letter different, so they had to change, you know, M. Bison was Mike Tyson. When they brought it over here, they switched the names of various characters because someone told them in America that wouldn't fly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they had switched, like, M. Bison around and to Barlog. Yeah. There's a lot of name differences, name changes. I was going to explain it all, but I got confused.
it's just in Japan. As long as it's like one letter different, it's like okay, that's fine.
Yeah, instead of Mike Tyson, it's M. Bison. So.
But in this game, it's like okay, here's Fighter Hayabusa, and he's Antonio Inoki, and it's so obvious he's Antonio Inoki. He's the same size. He's got the same black trunks. He does the same enziguri as his finisher. And it's like, yep, this is Inoki.
Yeah. This is a little bit before my time. Now, not to go too off topic, but a lot of my wrestling kind of knowledge came from a friend of mine when I was young. This is a little bit later in this game. It's like early 90s. His father was big into Japanese wrestling. He was a tape trader. So I remember we used to go there, and that's where I used to see a lot of the Japanese stuff. So when the game came out, I didn't know who anyone was, but come the later games, some like the Fire for Ones or some of the with rip-off wrestlers on the SNES, that would be the time when I start going, all right, that's awesome, Stan Hansen, whoever it may be. But the big thing with this game is that, and what makes it better than the other ones, first off, it's just like you said, Dan, it's more like a wrestling game. You know, there's grappling, there's a referee, there's the crowd kind of goes, you see them move around. And the other part is gameplay is much, much improved. It's like the Fire Pro Wrestling games that are going to precede it. It's all about timing. So basically when you walk up to someone, you'll immediately grapple. And the first person to time a move at once they hit the grapple would go first. So basically if whoever enters move first would get that move off. So it was about time, it was about speed, and it felt less spammy. And more moves happened. So it felt like a wrestling game. And I think that made it a lot more fun.
And you just felt like you knew what you're doing. Like in the other two games, it's just wild flailing and punching and kicking. And in this game, it's more, okay, I have to time this exactly right, and then boom, 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 boom. With a lot of wrestling games, the more it feels like you actually playing the game helps you, the better the game is. And I think that's kind of obvious, but I guess some developers didn't really pick up on that.
Yeah. And exactly. And it's a simple game. It's definitely for its time as it advanced. Even with Backward, it's simple. It still holds up. It's still fun. And of course the Pro Wrestling cover was then parodied by World Wrestling Entertainment for a John Cena shirt, which I still own, and it's still one of their better shirts.
And a winner is you, Brad. A winner is you.
That's what I say every day. I put it up on a poster. And he points at me and just goes, the winner is you. It's very nice. It's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, great game. But let's go, you know what? We talked enough about fake wrestlers. Let's talk about real wrestling, because it's real to me. It's real to everyone here. Let's talk about WWF WrestleMania for the Nintendo Entertainment System.
'80s WWF possible. Like, this is peak '80s WWF.
Yeah, it came out in January 1989. This is based on, like, just, you know, looking around, you know, coming out of WrestleMania 3 and 4. It's, like, everything's kind of coming up. It's made by Acclaim, who has known to not make good wrestling games. First reign of terror that we're gonna really get to.
I'm gonna put my dirt sheet subscriber hat on and go,
yeah, this is the most WWF because it's all style and no substance.
Takes that back off.
Yep.
Yeah. This game, they had great music. They had really cool menus. They had all the wrestlers had cool pictures when you went to the venue to pick the guys.
Cool, sounds great from that.
Yeah, when you were playing the game, they play like little like 8-bit versions of everybody's theme song, which is really cool. And then everything else is trash.
Pretty much. I mean, graphically it looked great, and I like the fact that you can hear everybody's music. But once you like get in there and start playing, it's not really that fun.
Graphically, maybe I can see, but there's this issue where everybody looks the same height.
That's true.
There's no sense of like, oh, Hulk Hogan's big and he's this massive guy, or Andre's huge. It's like everybody's sort of like these little squat, and everybody's fat for some reason.
Yeah.
Because when they're playing the game, like they're moving, they're kind of trying to create this idea of 3D by having them move up and down the ring. And when they do, they move very slowly, and they turn straight to, I guess, what camera would be, or to the screen, and just sort of chunkily walk, and they're so wide, and they're so rotund, that you're like, God, this is a WWF game. Why aren't all these guys muscular, I guess? But it's just every, like, Ted DiBiase looked like the Big Daddy, and Hulk Hogan looks like Big Daddy. Everybody looks like Big Daddy with different hair and different trunks.
Yeah, it's, and also they seem like they were trying to like look into the future and show what like WWF in 1995 was, because they wrestled in a black void where there's no crowd. Yeah, so there wasn't really any a lot of wrestling moves. Everyone had the exact same moves. There was no finishers in the game, if I remember correctly.
First game with Hulk Hogan actually in it. And Hulk Hogan was an icon in not only this country, but in Japan, where a lot of these games are being made. And they don't even have, like, the axe bomber clothesline. It's just, he punches you, and then you're dead, and then he pins you. And then you can do a move off the top, and that's about it. This game is no good. There's no leg drop, there's no clothesline, it's nothing.
Yeah, the way I appreciate is the graphics and the music and just like the overall presentation, not so much the gameplay.
This was, if we put WWF on and we put Hulk Hogan on the cover, this game will sell. We don't have to do any work. Make sure it's got Hulk Hogan, make sure it's got WWF, and then we'll sell some copies and go on to the next thing.
I think it sell pretty well, didn't it?
I would imagine it would have to. I mean, there was a WWF game before this on the Commodore 64, but this would have been the first one for Nintendo, so it would have had to have sold, I would imagine.
Yeah, that was during the peak years of WWF business in the 80s.
Yeah, almost the peak, 89. Mm-hmm. And, there's a lot of WWF games for the NES, and they don't really get much better. they got made kind of all teams, and they're all made by either Acclaim or LJN, which was Acclaim. LJN purchased Acclaim in 1990, so all the WWF games
I think Acclaim purchased them.
Yeah. And then there's a sequel that came out, WWF WrestleMania Challenge, which came out the following year, in November 1990, so like a year and a half afterwards. Slightly better, but about the same thing. Just kind of a couple new wrestlers in there. Ultimate Warrior was there. I'm a big Boss Man.
All looking like fat asses. This game is just... I hope I don't sound like a broken, but when you play this game, you're just like, God, everyone looks fat. Like, that's the number one... Everyone is so fat and so slow.
Now, was this, like, the same game, just with different... Like, a different roster? Is the gameplay the same?
The gameplay is mostly the same. They added specialty moves and tag team matches in there. The Ultimate Warrior was on the main screen, so you know they're ready to give him his push until they decide that Hulk Hogan decided that
he wasn't ready yet, brother.
This is the era where WWF Superstars opened with Warrior shooting lasers at him. It's the Warrior era, brother.
Yeah, and we'll get to those good arcade games soon, and that will be a lot better.
Those were the first good WWF games. You had to play a foot quarter at a time, but.
Mm-hmm. Let's just kind of lump all these, because there was this one, there was WrestleMania Challenge, there was WWF King of the Ring, and they're all kind of the same game.
I think King of the Ring, you can do a steel cage match. I think, or was
this
that an original?
A steel cage match too. It was steel cage challenge. I mean,
that's true.
This is the one where you needed to do it. Or sorry, it was wrestling challenge. But steel cage challenge came afterwards. I'm even mixing up my games there. But yeah, that was another game that had kind of the same thing. So.
Yeah, but for some reason, that's the only two games I played were WrestleMania, the first one, and King of the Ring. And I remember King of the Ring wasn't that much better. It was just the 1992-93 roster with, like, Bret Hart was on the cover. I think Lex Luger was in there, The Undertaker, a few others. I wouldn't say it's anything great, but...
That's the Acclaim touch. Make one engine and then just keep using it over and over and over until everyone cries.
We see that in the next generation of games, too.
Yeah, and what's actually funny about King of the Ring is it came out after those games. See, King of the Ring came out in September 93, which we're getting a little ahead of ourselves, but these games are all the same. I can't come up with them four or five times. And Royal Rumble and WWF WrestleMania came out in 91 and 93 respectively. So not only was there Super Mario World and Mega Man and stuff for you to play.
Street Fighter.
And a Super Nintendo. They're just like, hey, do you want to play the same game you played three times before? But this time it's Lex Luger's in it.
This time the roster's worse. Yeah.
He's a narcissist. He's gonna look on.
He's got the same music Shawn Michaels had one time.
Alright. Yeah, so those are all those games. Anything else you guys want to say with the those NES era WrestleMania or NES era WWF games?
They are garbage. And an indictment of the Nintendo, because if you go through the history of the Nintendo, this is what most licensed games were like. They might have, like, a sheen about them. They might have, like, something, you know, production-wise decent, but they were almost always terrible games. I don't think there's any of those, like, licensed, like, big major licensed games that came out for the Nintendo that weren't garbage.
Mm-hmm.
But you go through them, and it's like a list of angry video game nerd episodes. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the positive thing about those games were the music, which they ripped off of. The pop, like, you know, just off the top of my head, in general, a lot of those licensed games were, they had the likeness and they had the music from those kind of series.
Yeah.
And beyond that, it's not anything good. Just bad controls, bad everything. Just, it's a cash grab, pretty much.
And that was kind of LGN for you.
Yeah, LGN would be known for that.
It's you get a property first, and then think about how to make a game second.
Yeah,
and that's going on.
Yeah, but there is one more game we haven't gotten to, and we're gonna look on the other side. Think about the other side, which is more of my side, which is of course WCW Wrestling. A game that came out in 1990 that had a bunch of wrestlers that weren't even in the company anymore when it came out. Now, WCW Wrestling.
This is kind of a frustrating game.
Yeah.
Because when you play it back to back with a WWF game, it's better in every single way humanly possible. But it's like they don't know who any of the characters are or any of the people are, and so they just sort of. Like, slapped a likeness over just a generic wrestling game. It's not so much that they set out to make a WCW game so much as, okay, let's make a pretty decent little wrestling game and then, like, just put somebody's hair on it and say that's Ric Flair.
Yes. Yes, and the moves, you can choose your own moves and some of them you could throw it that way. This is, you've been on the head there, Dan. This was one of the first games that was a reskinned version of a Japanese game. Or they added a license to it. And when we get to the 3D era, I'm going to have a lot more to say about that, especially some things with those hockey games that everyone loves so much, which I do too, but I've got some problems with it. But this is one of the first games where it was like that, where it just kind of felt like it was kind of half-assed. Not really a bad game, good stuff in there, but a little bit half-assed. And
Everyone has long tights, so if you're like one of those, so if you're like OCD and you're like, well, that's not Ric Flair. Ric Flair doesn't wear long tights. That's retarded. It's ridiculous. Ah, breakdown.
Yes.
And he doesn't do the figure four. He does, what was it, a neck breaker type of thing? I can't really remember off the top of my head, but it's definitely not the figure four.
I don't think a lot of people had their own finishers. I think that's the thing everybody remembers about this game. They all had weird finishers.
So, like, if you're a little kid, you don't know that, oh, this was just some Japanese game that they just changed the skins on. You're like, well, this is, they don't love my WCW as much as I do. Cry.
Which is true. I mean,
And this game comes out like a year into Turner, so I always imagine that's probably what got this game done, because there's no way Jim Crockett would have been able to make a video game deal. So this is some of the early benefits of WCW now being under the Turner umbrella, is that you get a video game.
Yeah, I think Crockett might have like set a Nintendo or Atari on fire. I think it was like Witchcraft or something. Like that might have been there. But yeah, this game is known for having a lot of wrestlers that aren't in the game anymore or weren't in WCW at the time, including their cover stars, Hawk and Animal, which were actually the only two people from the game that it was based off of that moved over. I believe Flair was gone at the time as well. Lex Luger was also gone.
What year was this released?
1990. It was late 90.
Okay, because it looks like early 89 roster. From what it looks like here. Yeah, by 1990, late 1990, Eddie Gilbert definitely wasn't there, and I don't think Steve Williams was either.
Like all those UWF guys had been run off. Eddie Gilbert got run out of the company as soon as Flair got the book, so he would have been long gone by the time this thing was coming out. But I guess the developer didn't get the memo when they were switching the skins.
Yeah, the rosters for all these NES games are kind of dated. But then again, you can see WWE 2K15. They'll have roster of characters that are kind of outdated. Is this a thing in video games and wrestling?
And especially back in the 90s during the Monday Night Wars, especially their ending, people would flip sides all the time, and then the cutoff point for when they finalize the roster be like, well, sorry guys, you don't get any Invasion wrestlers in the SmackDown game, or you don't get anybody. Big Show falls out of favor, so he gets replaced with Stevie Richards.
Oh, is that the No Mercy thing? Is that what the story is?
That happened in both of the SmackDown game and No Mercy that came out.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Big Show got dumped for Stevie Richards because they got mad at him. And it was too late to, all the storylines were based on the stories leading up to WrestleMania 2000 that year, so they got to have somebody in the Big Show role, so
That does make sense about one issue that I'll get to when we talk about those games, because there was one instance I was about one of the story modes I think that's really interesting. But yeah, just the roster overturn in these games are very they're not very good, but I mean that's just the nature of the business. You'll get rosters that are completely different than when it's released as opposed to when it was in development.
But just to put a button on this WCW wrestling game, it's if you're going back and playing it, like I did, probably we did here, you're playing it and you're like, this is pretty fun. I'm actually enjoying this. This isn't so bad. But just I could just imagine putting myself in the mind of somebody playing this game who's a huge WCW fan going, this is the most bullshit. Arrgh. Fire out of eyes.
I don't know. I mean, the thing with a lot of those games is we don't have the same expectation. Like, I've been, been talking a lot, especially on the F4W board, about the new WWE game, 2K16. And, a lot of the comments on there are definitely justified. You can definitely see, the way I and, everyone else kind of talks about it is that the things that the problems that we had now, and they're all justified, it's like they're just a little bit more nitpicky than say what it was, the issues from years and years ago. And that's just how games evolved, especially. But, I mean, now it's just more like, oh, I can do a suplex and there's a pin. Like, that's that was good enough at the time. And things were kind of, you know, things like that were fun. But there weren't a lot of good ones. This wasn't one of them as well. I had this game, so I got a little bit of nostalgia for it. But the next game is the last one we're going to be talking about is probably the is one of the better wrestling games. I'd say
I would say this is easily the best NES wrestling game.
Now I've played all these games for a long time, but I'm more interested in what you guys think. So we're talking about Tecmo World Wrestling. It's got a lot of innovations for it. It's got the look of it with a T. It's the first game with announcing. So at the bottom of the screen, there'd be an announcer who would translate what's going on, play-by-play of what's happening. It was all timing-based, just like the original pro wrestling game. But yeah, what do you guys think about this? It's coming in with fresh and in 2015.
It's like, how is this even a Nintendo game? Like, it's just so far. Like, when you put this game, just take a screenshot and put it next to Muscle. Or put it next to Tag Team Wrestling, and you're going to go, how? How did the same system, well, how were you able to play both of these games on the same video game system? Because it is just so worlds better, just graphically. The crowd actually has, like, individual features to them. And there's a referee in the ring, and there's an announcer at the bottom, like running down the moves. I was just blown away by this game, and it's definitely got more of an anime to it because the announcer and the there's a manager lady who like tells you, ooh, you need to get ready for a match. In between matches, you need to go train, and she's very 80s anime looking, and all those little touches, like, it's sort of, I would say this is the one wrestling game that's a real, like, you could put this back-to-back with Punch-Out, which is obviously the famous boxing game that everybody has played. These games, like, these are equal games. You are on the same level. You could play Punch-Out, you could play Tecmo Pro Wrestling and go, these have, like, these are both worthy of being compared to each other.
Yeah, for me, I haven't played this game, but just comparing it to, I guess we were talking about earlier, like, Muscle, I mean, this is like night and day. I mean, the crowd looks a lot better. The ring looks a lot better. I mean, there's a training mode, I think, from what it looks like I'm seeing here. You know, everything just looks so much better. I mean, out of all these games that we've been talking about, I mean, I would play this game before any of the other ones.
And the roster is so deep compared to what we've been playing. You know, otherwise here, and it's all like it's all like name changes from real wrestlers. So you like Inoki's in the game, Tiger Mask, Luthez, a guy who looks like the Road Warriors combined into one person, Jackie Chan and Bruce Lee mixed together. There's a Russian Stan Hansen. There's a guy who's kind of like Rick Rude and Ric Flair jammed together. There's a Mexican Hulk Hogan, which the real Hulk Hogan would probably be furious about. there's a Harley Race in here. There's a Vader, you know. So, and the Super Strong Machine under a different name. So there's all of these characters. Like, every single person in this game, you could recognize them and go, oh, that guy's kind of like a real wrestler that I'm aware of.
Well, he was actually, he was Super Strong Machine in the Japanese version.
Okay. So they just changed his name for the American.
Yeah, I think that was the case. I believe he was the only real wrestler in the game.
So it's just, you're playing this game and you're like, every character is recognizable to me. The moves are so much more fun to do. There's all this. I mean, even if the game was boring as hell to play, like the WrestleMania games, the fact that it's this far ahead graphically and presentation-wise, you would go, well, this was the best game of all of them. Like, that's how far above this game is, Tecmo Pro Wrestling is, than the other pro wrestling games, just as far as presentation and graphics and all that. Mm-hmm. It's an amazing game. I, you know, obviously Tecmo at the time, I think Tecmo was ruling the world in sports games, because obviously Tecmo Bowl is a legendary sports game, football game, and that's around this same era. So they were on their game, and if Tecmo made a sports game, you were friggin' happy because it was gonna be good.
Do you remember if this is out on the virtual console?
The Tecmo Wrestling? Yes. I don't think so. Maybe on the Wii one, but I don't think it's on the Wii U one.
Yeah, it's not on the Wii U one. I know for sure. I was wondering if it was on the Wii. Because I know Tecmo releases Tecmo Bowl on those systems, but I know it just came out. Tecmo Bowl just came out on the Wii U Virtual Console.
Yeah.
That game was such a cultural phenomenon, though, and it's like a thing that people reference all the time. Like the boat, like Bo Jackson on Tecmo Bowl, is so like legendary video game characters, but. I would love to see this game be in a position where people can play it without having to use an emulator or hunt something down.
Yeah, because it looks like a game I would love to try, but I don't know where I would get it, except for, like, emulators.
And there's, like, cut scenes where, like, you'll do a move and it'll cut, you know, almost like, oh, here's a really cool animation of that move.
Oh, and like when you score a touchdown, right, in a Tecmo Bowl?
Yeah, it's like the touchdown thing in Tecmo Bowl, and it's like, my God, how are you doing this?
Yeah.
But it's amazing. If there's any of these games we pointed out, this is the one you have to play. I would even say you can skip NES Pro Wrestling. It's a cool t-shirt. We've all seen the image of Winner Is You, but this is the game you have to play.
Yeah, I would definitely agree on that side there. There's a lot to it. It definitely has a feel of like wrestling, especially in the time. There's training involved. The wrestlers have tens of moves each. I think it's like 20 or 30 individual moves for each wrestler. It's still got that same kind of time-based thing that the original pro wrestling does. So it still has that kind of stuff. But yeah, very fun game. It still holds up. It's still fun. Now, let's get away from home consoles just for a little bit. We're going to talk about these two games at the same time. And really the sequel more than anything else. Also in its peak, late 80s. Early 90s, WWF released two arcade games, WWF Superstars, and its more well-known sequel, which is really the one we're going to talk about here, WWF WrestleFest.
Yeah, they're basically the same game.
They are basically the same game.
WrestleFest looks prettier.
WrestleFest looks better, and it has the station moves in it, which is kind of important. But the big thing, WrestleFest is one of those games. There was two arcade games that I always played when I was at the arcades. Columns, because I was damn fucking good at it.
Well, that's a good game.
And WrestleFest. And WrestleFest is just perfect for the arcades. It's fast-paced. The characters are big and detailed in the ways that you want it. The moves are there. Announcers are there. It's super fun.
Got Jake the Snake doing the DDT. I feel like Jake the Snake was in this game just because everybody in wrestling knew the DDT was the coolest move of this era. So it's like, well, we got to get that in the game, and it is, and it's great.
Yeah. Now, do you guys have any? Do you guys play this game when it came out?
Well, I don't. I'm not even sure what all of our ages are. I'm 26. So
I'm 27.
So when I was coming up, my prime. Arcading time was like 98, 99, 2000, and by that point, you didn't see this game in the nicer arcades as much.
Yeah.
It was just sort of a little long in the tooth, but if you're in like a bowling alley or a skating rink, are these things that kids go to anymore?
No. Why not play bowling? I don't know.
Do kids still go skating? Because if this was at every single skating rink you ever went to.
That's what you played. I didn't go to any arcades. I went to what? I didn't go to any arcades. You went to there'd be a couple games where like exactly you're talking at a skating rink or whatever. You'd see a pinball machine in some weird spot. Those were
If you went to some place near the beach, because I don't, you know where I'm from, we always went to the beach every summer, and it was. There'd be some rinky dink ass arcade right on the beach, and it would have this. So it was a little long in the tooth by the time I got to play it, but that meant I always played it because it was usually the only game in there that would really catch your eye. Because there might be only two or three other games, and it'd be some driving crappy NASCAR game, and or this, and it'd be I'm playing wrestling.
For me,
I actually when a lot of times when I would see this game, it would be side by side with Superstars. They would actually have them side by side, which always, and now retrospect, you're like, you really need both of them? But
yeah,
they did, and so I kind of liked Superstars a little bit better because I liked Randy Savage, and that was the one with Randy Savage in it. Obviously, WrestleFest didn't, but WrestleFest is a much prettier game. So you could, they're both based on the idea of you pick two famous WWF characters, you have a tag team matches with all the other playable characters, and then you face the big, strong, badass tag team at the end for the tag team titles. In Superstars, it's Ted DiBiase and Andre, and in WrestleFest, it's the Road Warriors.
Which is
so the whole game. The whole game is building up to the Legion of Doom. You got to fight these unstoppable badasses.
It's like a high Hulk Hogan punching the thing that tells you how long it's going to be. But more importantly, what happens is before you fight them, Mean Gene Okerlund, or really bad Mean Gene Okerlund impersonator, speaks to a really bad Road Warriors impersonator, and you know they tell them that they die on danger and snack on death. And
it might
I
have
never
just been Animal doing impressions of Hawk, because they could just get Animal in the room.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, but I remember that promo. I could probably still say it word for word. It is terrific. And you play it, there's the two modes. One you're talking about is in both, which is Saturday Night Event mode, where you play tag team matches, and you have to, you beat them once, and then you defend your titles, and then once you beat them twice, it ended. I, of course, won with the greatest team of all time of Earthquake and the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. They're a well-known team.
For some reason, I like to use Mr. Perfect and Hulk Hogan. They're both Bond.
I was always Warrior and Jake. I always had to have Jake in there so I could do that DDT. And then Warrior just looked cool to me because of, you know. By the time I'm playing this game, like, all these guys are out of wrestling.
Yeah,
Warrior looks pretty cool. I'll use him.
That's how I got into, like, the older era stuff because, like you, Dan, I mean, I didn't play these games until, like, 98, 99, 2000, and, the first time I remember playing it was, like, at a Pizza Hut.
This is a perfect Pizza Hut game.
Yeah, definitely.
It would be like this in a driving game and a claw game. That would be at every Pizza Hut.
Yeah.
Can't even go to Pizza Huts anymore. That seems like the saddest thing in the world.
They don't have the arcades anymore. I mean, mine doesn't anymore. I don't even know what game they have over there.
And malls are all dead, right? Like, malls are just places where a homeless man will shiv you and steal your wallet.
I mean, at malls, you'd still get, like, the handle machine. What did you say? They were claw machines, yeah.
Yeah.
But not, like, arcade games.
And at the time, like, the arcade at the mall was, like, if you were at a nice mall, they would never have this game. It would just be, like, the latest Tekken and the latest Street Fighter and Marvel versus Capcom. That would be the only thing you could find in a nice arcade, and like a million other games. But then this game would be at the crappy mall that rich people didn't shop at anymore.
Yeah.
So it would always. But that meant that when you saw this game, you played the hell out of it. So.
Yeah, I mean, my experiences. I mean, the only thing I remember about playing games at Pizza Hut were Super Street Fighter 2, and then later when they got rid of the arcade, they only had like two arcade games left in. One of them was WrestleFest, and another one was like a shooter with a penguin. I forget what it's called, but
You'd see this game next to games about deer hunting a lot.
Yeah.
Deer hunting games, and then the what was that golf game that people got obsessively
like into? Golden Tee.
That's it. Yeah. Golden Tee. You'd see this game next to Golden Tee a lot.
Yeah.
I like Near Turf Master. how about golf kids? Yeah, but the other mode in this as well was a World Rumble mode, which is also fun. Fun fact, I believe this is the only game that has famous pro wrestling announcer Mike McGurk
as
the game.
Yeah.
Game, I played it a little while ago. I think I played this game like 6 months ago or so. And still fun, still holds. It was a really good half an hour. Which who knows how long it would have cost me.
Did you guys play like the iOS version they released a few years ago?
No.
I
heard it wasn't very good.
Yeah, I didn't hear it was very good. I think that they just used the graphics and and I think the gameplay, I'm not sure what kind of gameplay it was, but I know they released a version of it and it wasn't that well received, which is disappointing because I've always wanted like a remake of some sorts on home consoles, but it never really came to pass.
I don't know if it would have held up, you know, because for one thing, none of the home consoles could have done this damn graphic. Okay, this was definitely ahead of what the home consoles were at the time.
Yeah, that's true. Because
when you're sitting at home, you kind of want the game to be a little bit more than what this was.
Yeah, exactly, because I remember a few years ago they released the Simpsons game, the Konami beat 'em up. And,
yeah,
it
doesn't hold up either.
No, it doesn't. I mean, it was fun playing for a couple hours, but then after that, it's like, well, now what? I mean, you could play the different kind of versions that they released around the world, but there's not much substance there, and really, all those Konami games just were about beating up, you know, whatever enemies, and it wasn't really that engaging.
I mean,
it's more nostalgia than anything.
It works when you're in an arcade, and
exactly, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you're only going to be sitting on one machine for maybe 10 minutes,
yeah,
and then you're moving on to something else, and then you maybe come back to it. So you've had a chance to, like, cleanse your palate, I guess. And then you're like, oh, this is fun! I want to stay here for a little bit. No, now I'm going to try to go play Marvel vs. Capcom. I played a lot of Marvel vs. Capcom, guys.
Yeah, I did too.
I played that game. Oh,
yeah.
War Machine, baby.
Yeah. Well, yeah, they're still fun. Like I said, they still hold up. Yeah, let's get out of the arcades here, and let's move on to the 16-bit era. And let's keep on the WWF train for a little bit here, and let's talk about more LJN. They released three games in fairly, you know, in succession. They're both the same kind of gameplay style, which, except, once again, the first one in the series doesn't have fingers. they all wrestle the same. WWF WrestleMania, WWF Royal Rumble, and WWF Raw. Which came out a year apart each, starting in 91. And they were both kind of the same thing. And you guys, it seemed like, I didn't play a lot of these when I was younger, but it seemed like you guys did.
I played Raw. I mean, I played the two other ones on emulators and stuff, but I remember playing Raw the most, and, you know, they're not very good. I mean, graphically, it's a lot better than NES games, obviously, but when you'd wrestle, it's like, just all it is grunts. There's like no music or anything. It's just grunts back and forth, and the gameplay is not that fun. For some reason, I think Raw had Luna Vachon in it. I'm like, why is a woman wrestler in there if there's no other women wrestlers to wrestle?
That had to be straight up Mortal Kombat, right?
Yeah,
like
that
Mortal Kombat had female characters, and Street Fighter had female characters. So it's like, well, so fighting game now, there's got to be a female in there.
That's true.
So like, let's pick this. But
very
Luna
different
was.
Times.
You would have believed Luna could fight men more than you could Medusa, because Luna was insane.
Yeah.
Yeah. She encapsulated that insanity better.
Was Raw the one?
These were the games I grew up on. Like as a young'un, these were the games I had.
Yeah.
So
was Raw the
my wrestling games that I had? That, you know, had that childhood nostalgia to them.
So was Raw the one with the finishing moves, or like the really weird moves? Because no one of them had like really weird video game kind of moves, like finishers.
Yes, the original WrestleMania game didn't have finishing moves, and then they were added on in the second game, which is WWF Royal Rumble, which, surprise, surprise, it added the Royal Rumble mode. And then Raw had super finishing moves, which involved like people like jumping halfway across the ring.
Yeah.
The first time you figure out how to do that, you lose your shit.
Yeah.
Like the first time you playing as 1-2-3 kid and you do that thing where you dive from one corner to the other and then do a senton, you're like, oh my god, I have figured out everything. Yeah,
those are pretty cool.
They had like all these. Like, is that a thing in video games now where you don't tell people that you can do cool things and they're just supposed to figure it out on their own?
I think it's just harder to not get that stuff spoiled like it was.
Yeah.
And also, if there was a button combination like, in the new game that you could just do like a crazy move, I don't think people would like it as much. I think people would be kind of pissed off.
Oh, that's not realistic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would ghost at people.
Yeah.
And Bam Bam could turn into a fire torpedo if you figured out the right button combination. One of the interesting things about this game, I think, was that the Royal Rumble game, depending on which console you had, you got a completely different roster, almost. I had a SNES, so I had the version that had Ric Flair and Tatanka in it, and I was pretty happy about that.
The Native American Tatanka? I don't know that other guy.
I was a huge fan of Native American Tatanka. He's actually from about 20 minutes from where I'm sitting and doing this show right now. So he's a big legend in these parts because he's the local boy who made good.
Pembroke, North Carolina, isn't it?
Yeah, Pembroke, North Carolina.
Cool.
The home of UNC Pembroke, home of the Braves. And then Ric Flair, obviously, you know, you're a WCW kid, NWA kid growing up. So Ric Flair being in a video game where he can actually do his moves and looks like Ric Flair is a huge deal. But it also that we didn't get Hulk Hogan, who's the biggest star in the world. So I guess what happened is in between the Genesis version and the WrestleMania, or the WrestleMania, the Super Nintendo version coming out is when Hogan left the company. So
yeah, I think there's
X-Nay.
I think there's like a period in 92 and 93 where he just left because he wanted to get out of the public eye because of all the steroid allegations, so that's probably when that game was released.
That was more, more Vince than it was anyone else.
Yeah.
Then there's the big falling out, you know, over Vince wanting Hogan to put over Bret Hart, and Hogan going, no way ever will that happen. So that's that period, and so that's a little bit of an acrimonious leave. And so Hogan's not in the game. I got to play a bunch as a kid. But the WWF Raw and you know, there's some of the Hogan moves are still animated in the game. So especially by the time you get to WWF Raw, everybody does the leg drop they animated for him. So it's like, we're going to give all your moves to everybody. And, you know, almost everybody did the Hogan boot. All the big wrestlers did the Hogan big boot coming off the ropes. So it's like maybe a little bit of vindictiveness there to the Hulkster.
Mm. Who knows? For those kind of games, I don't.
Or
think
it's just like we animated it, so we got to do something with it.
I don't know how much hands-on at this point Vince or the WWF had with these games. I'm pretty sure it was pretty, even, like, it's not as limited as, say, like, No Mercy, where they didn't really do too much, but these games were kind of limited, and what kind of brings up with what you're speaking about roster changes is these games, this was around when I got old enough to start realizing that the wrestlers all in there, like, half the wrestlers in these games weren't even in, like, weren't there, and there were so many people missing from that time, and I think especially the first game, Super WrestleMania, the one that came in 92, it's a really weird one because it's like an 80s, it's like just before WWF changes from like its 80s kind of style to like the new generation.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a bunch of like, it's got like Macho Man and like the Road Warriors and Hogan in it, but it's like 1992 and you know, you're playing as 93. It felt out of date even then.
Yeah.
There's a major roster change overhaul in like 92-93.
Yeah.
So yeah. It would be weird to play that later, a year later.
But in some ways, though, that kind of made it better if you were a WCW fan, because a lot of these guys made it their way down to WCW in that period. So it's like, oh, I'm getting to play the wrestlers I know, and because you don't necessarily know why any of this happened, you just know this was the game that was at the video store, and there wasn't a WCW game.
No.
But it had a guy from WCW in it, so you're like, oh, I'll play this. The WWF Raw game, and I love these games because they're nostalgic for me. I will admit they weren't very good, but graphically I thought they were all pretty decent.
Yeah.
Especially by the time you get to Raw, there's a lot of different game modes. You know, you can do the Royal Rumble, you can do singles tournaments, you can do tag team tournaments, which is pretty cool. and the roster got pretty big by the time you get to Raw. And but one of the things, even I'll admit, is like the laziness of when they first put Shawn Michaels in the game, and you know he comes in Royal Rumble era, he was doing that angle suplex thing, that whatever, that suplexy thing. So even though by Raw he has been doing the super kick almost for 2 years now, nope, you don't get that. You got to keep doing his weird suplex thing, and that annoyed me even as a kid because I wanted to super kick some fools.
Now, dude, which one was the Sega CD one?
Rage in the Cage was the Sega CD one, where if you won, you got a 15-second clip.
Yeah, that's what I remember about that one.
Undertaker, good job.
I mean, I think you can view their finisher in the character select screen. That's what I remember about that one.
Yes, if you waited for a second, it would show the finisher.
Yeah.
And Raw was the only game with Diesel in it. That was a SNES game, if I'm not mistaken. So this was your only way, if you were a fan of Big Daddy Cool, to play. Even, and he didn't have his cool music, he had just the honking horn. So, you can't get everything you want.
Yeah.
I remember I thought the game was glitched, because I didn't remember that. And I didn't really follow WBS very much at the time, but I thought the game was glitched. I'm like, why isn't he playing the music? It's just a horn, it's broken. But the game...
And that was the game I was playing when I really started getting into WWF at the time, because 1995 is when I started watching WWF. I got into Shawn Michaels as a real, that's the guy for me. And so that was the era of WWF that I kind of knew better than other eras as a youngin. And so any little thing that was wrong did kind of bother me, but it was also fun to be able to play those people. So.
Yeah. And, they're a fun team. I didn't play a lot of them. I kind of played a little bit later. They're kind of fun. They're button-ashy. If you get, I think a lot of these games are bad, but if you kind of get, enough people playing these things, you can kind of forget a lot of what's going on. And nostalgia is a lot of it.
And these games, were kind of, they had, a tug-of-war type of mechanic to it, where you would lock up, and then whoever was hitting the button fast enough, there'd be a meter over their head. And if you were able to get the meter to go red on your side, it meant you got to do your move. So when you're playing the computer, you kind of kicked everybody's ass because the computer wasn't as fast as you. But if you played a human being, you're just sitting there like rocking back and forth in an eternal grapple.
Yeah. Yeah, people were good at getting that work. Yeah, those are those games. But WCW also had a single Super Nintendo game.
It's amazing.
Darren didn't even have a Genesis game, but this is the game that I had, which was Super Brawl Wrestling. This was just when Flair kind of came back, so you had Flair and Vader and Rick Rude in there. So I think it was it had a lot of the people on it there. It's mostly what I remember for is that is the character select screen where it had the wrestlers doing animated gifs, and they would just yell at you with their things. So yeah, you'd hear Ron Simmons keep telling you to show respect, and Brian Pillman would tell you he's something of excellence. And
Johnny B. Bad would say he's a bad man.
Yep.
And that was Johnny B. Bad in his most Liberace-esque form. Before he had eliminated some of that stuff.
I don't think any of the wrestlers did their own voices, did they? Because none of them sound like the actual wrestlers.
It's I feel like Flair sounded like Flair when I went through this game. It's weird who did and who didn't, because you expect all the lower card guys would be yeah, I'll make time to be in the video game, but it's not. It's the lower you are, the more likely it is they just got some guy to go, show me respect.
Yeah, because I know Ron Simmons didn't sound like Ron Simmons. And I think there's I think some of them just grunted or yelled, I think Rick Steiner did. I know Tony Schiavone did the intro, and that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's the thing about this game is it was really
and
pretty.
Commentary. Yeah, the presentation is really good in this game.
And the graphics, I think, are pretty good for the Super Nintendo. I would say it's definitely better than the LGN games, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Some, some of the collision detection is really terrible, but hey, it's Super Nintendo. You know, what are you expecting?
Yeah.
Slit WWE 2K? You're not getting that, fool. You're getting the best you can get. But this game does have one pretty big problem. Or at least a couple of big problems. One, all the finishing moves, you're lucky if they even look halfway right. Or if you're lucky if the video game designer even knew what the character's finishing move was. Because in some cases, it's not quite sure. I don't think they actually knew what Vader... They had Vader in a weird singlet, so off the top, I don't think they were too familiar with what Vader was supposed to be like. And his finishing maneuver looked to be a suplex, we'll say. which I don't remember Vader winning matches with suplexes. That seems a little bit different.
He didn't beat the Guardian Angel with a suplex, that I know.
And the submissions were weird, because instead of submitting, the referee did a 10 count, which I've never seen that before. That's just making stuff up, guys.
Yeah.
I don't know, Ric Flair winning via a pinfall in a submission hold is the most authentic thing in the history of wrestling video games, though. So I will give him that.
Well, both this one and the NES game were developed by FCI, right?
Yeah, I don't even know who they are.
Would they wouldn't have become Spike later, would they? Those are two different companies, right?
Yeah, I think FCI is different than Spike, but
yeah,
it is similar in the sense that every character has the same moves to do. Like,
yeah,
there's not really anything customized. They do have the finishing moves. They did try to get that more authentic. Most guys do have their finisher, but even like I said with Vader. No, that's not his move. Rick Steiner's move was weird. Brian Pillman's finishing move was killing himself and somehow getting a 3 count. but you did get Sting. So if you were a little Stinger, you had your boy Sting.
Looking at their Wikipedia. They went out of business like shortly after. I think they only released a couple of games after this. I think they were planning on a Genesis version, but they never released it.
That's the dark history of wrestling video games, is how often a wrestling video game is the last ditch effort from a video game developer to stay in business.
Yeah.
We'll be talking about dark wrestling games in a few minutes here, but yeah, we're seeing a pattern here. We're almost done talking about license games, but we'll leave one until the end. But you could tell the difference, like how many we've talked about two WCW games, and there was only one other one, which is a Game Boy game. Compared to the WWF game, it's obviously WWF was popular and things like that, and they didn't have Turner just yet to throw in a lot of money at them.
And these were the darkest days of WCW. Like, we've talked on this show about 2000 WCW, where, like, their television was nigh unwatchable in some ways. But this was the period where they literally only existed because Ted Turner said so. They were losing money hand over fist. Their arena shows were drawing, you know, 5 rednecks and a murder victim. Nobody was going to anything. They were kind of decent on television ratings, to be fair, but this is a company that existed 100% because Ted Turner decided they should exist. So they weren't necessarily the best choice for a video game developer, like what license to go after. Because it's just like, who's going to buy them? Like, nobody's watching them. And their audience was older than WWF's audience, so not as many video game players. You get games like Super Brawl, where it's got a lot of good stuff going on with its presentation, but it's just sort of slapped together, and it feels like an unfinished game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
more so than any. And that's a thing that runs into a lot with wrestling games, where you just feel like you didn't finish this at all.
And, so let's go a little bit on the other side of the world here and talk about some good games. Now, we're going to talk with three. We're going to talk with Fire Pro for a little bit here. Now we're not going to talk. We're not every Fire Pro game because the changes are pretty minimal, things like that. But I think there's definitely a lot to talk about the games themselves. But I kind of curated a little bit here. We're going to choose the best, and some of the more weird versions. But one of the best versions of Fire Pro Wrestling to come out in the 90s, before the Dreamcast game, was Fire Pro Wrestling X Premium Edition, which was one of the first ones. Now, I know I've been playing Fire Pro for forever, but I think you guys, this was one of the first time that you played the game. Now, we kind of went over a little bit about the general things about the series for the first one, which is the Pro Wrestling, which is considered basically the first Fire Pro game. The actual first Fire Pro game came out for the PCI Engine, late, known as the TurboGrafx-16 here. But this Fire Pro Wrestling X isn't the first, even the first Super Nintendo game. There's like four before it. But I would consider this one the best. One of the big things that we kind of spoke about here, too, is the immense roster. Now, most of these games at this point didn't have licenses for rosters, so they made slight alterations to character models and names, and sometimes they just change names. Sometimes it's pretty simple. So they had like every single big thing in Japan, so All Japan, which was the biggest promotion at the time, New Japan, a little bit of FMW, and a couple of WWF wrestlers as well. And not to mention just that, it also had, I believe, Fire Pro Wrestling X Premium had 80 created spots, so not, I have to say, 100 regular wrestlers. Keep in mind, this is 1996.
Yeah.
100 wrestlers.
We've been playing games where, like I just said, WWF Raw was kind of amazing because you had, like, 10. Now we have 100. Like, that's how revolutionary this game is. To me, the big thing about these games is just how this doesn't make sense, how you could be playing this at the same time as these other games. But there's one of the interesting things about it is if you were playing sports games at the time, you were kind of used to this, and it's funny that this thing that existed in the 90s is part of the reason why people still play these games. So, but when you were playing sports games in the 90s, a lot of times you wouldn't get the license to, like, the Players Association of whatever league.
It wouldn't be the players. Normally, for those games, you'd get the Players Association, but you wouldn't get the actual license for the thing.
Yeah. You usually got one or the other. Like, the game either had the teams or it had the players. You never got both.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I grew up playing Ken Griffey Jr. baseball for the Super Nintendo, and so the only player in the game was Ken Griffey. You had all the teams, though, and they had an edit feature so that you could edit the actual players in, and they really had the actual rosters. Everything was the same, but you had to go through and change their names.
Why would
the actual players.
Wasn't Ken Griffey Jr. the one where they had, like celebrities and stuff as the names of baseball players?
depending on what team, yeah. Especially the Anaheim Angels was all old actors. Because it was the California Angels, so... And John Wayne and whatever.
Oh, that game is amazing. Oh man, I love that. Let's just talk about Ken Griffey Jr.
If you wanted to be authentic pitching, it wasn't for you. But if you wanted to play baseball and hit the ball, boom. But anyway, so that sort of thing was sort of common, and that's what the Fire Pro games are sort of going off of. Is that people were kind of used to when you played a sports game. You don't get to have the licenses for all the players, so we'll just make the exact same models.
Uh-huh.
Everyone knows this is Randy Savage. You know it's Randy Savage. I know it's Randy Savage. He's wearing Randy Savage's glasses and hat and jacket and pants. But he's named, like, Jerk Fartface. And you just got to change it to Randy Savage, and then you're happy.
Yeah.
And so the general idea of that isn't so revolutionary, but the fact that they had so many wrestlers is what made it amazing. And I think this game had such a huge impact on the licensed video games that we got in America in the 3D era, because when you would play No Mercy or you would play SmackDown series, they would have all these like people's types in the create a player, and they basically have all this stuff to help make it easier to create players. And it goes directly back, I think, to Fire Pro. People knew that's why people loved this game, is you were always able to update the roster because wrestling was changing so quickly. There's no way to get one locked in roster, so the fact that you could constantly change it, there's still people playing these games. They've updated them, and they have like Bray Wyatt wrestling a fish, and it's great. And, you know, they got Nakamura in some Super Nintendo game because that's how customizable it is. Mm-hmm. So it's just they made something kind of perfect, you know.
Yeah.
The gameplay's hard as hell, mm-hmm. especially if you're used to playing most wrestling games, like getting the timing right and the punching. Just being able to throw a punch and actually connect with the guy is way harder than any other wrestling game I've ever played.
Yeah,
but it feels worth it because you know if you figure out this game, you figure out how the gameplay works, you've literally got something you can play for decades almost. So
Literally decades.
I mean, my experiences with it are purely the customization, like creating characters and editing the roster. I mean, that's what everybody remembers it for because it's so deep and so intricate. Like, I didn't even get the connection between that and No Mercy until right now when I realized, like, yeah. I mean, Fire Pro Wrestling was the first game where you could edit characters and you can create your own characters and they would actually look like the versions you see on TV. So that's very influential in that regard. And, I mean, I don't know how deep it was in the Super Nintendo versions. I mean, I know I played a little bit of a Fire Pro Returns on the PS2. But yeah, I mean, when I think about Fire Pro Wrestling, I just think about the deep creative character. And I know in later versions, I think they would have more, like, hardcore kind of modes and more, like, different match types. But I played a little bit of it. I played a little bit of Fire Pro Returns, and I do remember it was a high learning curve. But I also played the Game Boy Advance version when that first came out, a long time ago, I think like 2003. Yeah. But yeah, it's a very influential series.
Yeah, it's definitely good. Like, you're talking about that, and yeah, Fire Pro Returns, the one that came out on PS2, and there's a PS3 version as well. It's probably still one of the best wrestling games ever. It added a bunch of customization. You can do MMA matches, you can do cages, it even adds, like, the customization, it's kind of the same. You can make those changes, things like that. You can change every part, you can change the way the computer utilizes your wrestler, so you can make it so how he reacts to certain attacks, what moves he wants to use more and less, things like that. Just a level of detail, especially for 1996, that's just ridiculous. Yeah. And one of the big things, like, I'll just get into a little bit of detail here, just about the gameplay itself, just before we go on a little bit here. So basically the way, kind of like we talked in pro wrestling, when you go up to someone, you grapple. Now the big thing with this would be, it's all about timing. So you'd have to press a button when they just got together, and then you'd have a chance to do a move. Now the big difference here is that there was different levels of attacks. So there was medium, and there was light, and there were strong attacks. And you could do any of those moves at any time, in theory, but when you started off, they actually told you to try to do weak wrestling moves first, because there would be a better chance of them doing it earlier in the match. You'd have to try to wear them down. You could try to do a power bomb, but it's at first, but, you know, Billy Kidman style, it would get reversed most likely in the earlier part of the match. So
get back body drops or something like that.
Yeah. And one of the biggest problems that we talked about last week was pacing. Like, a lot of the problem with the new games is that you can go in and you start doing stunners over and over again, and you never felt that pacing. I think Fire Pro changed that to make it like a pacing of a Japanese match. Maybe not an American match, and I think that's maybe why it never really came here for a long time. But it felt like the Japanese style match. I think that's why people still love these things today, is that it still feels good. It's all about timing, it's about skill, and there's just so much you can do to customize and change it. And so a lot of these games are most of the same gameplay wise. It's just it still holds up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's like if they changed the gameplay in any big way, there'd be an uproar. Or if they change, like, the graphics.
Well, that's what happened with the 360 version. Do you remember that one?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really play much of it, but I saw a quick look on Giant Bomb. And
it looks terrible.
These games kind of remind me of, like, those really, really awesome 2D fighting games that still come out. And it's like, there's this, like, a whole culture around people learning how to play those games and learning every intricate detail of, like, how to play them. And even though they're kind of anachronistic to look at now because models are so much bigger and they're sort of based on, like, photographs and actual, like, body scans to look exactly perfect. And obviously these guys do look a little bit cartoony compared to modern graphics. The fact that people are just used to this is how a Fire Pro game looks, so this is how it should look. Gosh dang it. And it works. You know, in this context, it works. And you want to see modern wrestlers Fire Pro. You don't want to see Fire Pro start looking like modern games. But yeah, the big difference, I think, is some of the games I played through is, like, when you play Super Fire Pro, the graphics are not quite as good as when you get to the next year, so they're always making these little tweaks that you can definitely notice.
Yeah.
As far as, like, making characters maybe a little bit bigger, or making them maybe have a little bit more detail on their trunks, or a little bit more detail on their faces, within the same basic formula of how their graphics work.
Yeah. And, yeah, there's kind of a lot to it there. Now, another kind of, there's a whole bunch of different ones here. For them, but like, do you have any more thoughts about the gameplay there, Brian, before we kind of get on to a couple of spin-off games for this series?
Not really. It's just that it's hard to get into, but once you do, it's pretty fun. I mean, I haven't extensively played the Fire Pro Wrestling series, but I do know that that Fire Pro Returns has a lot of cool modes, and I like testing that out.
I would go so far as to say it's an impossible game for, like, the first maybe 5 hours you play it.
Yeah.
Like, it takes you many hours before you can beat anybody. And I'm talking about putting the difficulty on one. It took me so long just to be able to beat anybody with, like, Hulk Hogan versus a woman. Like, I still couldn't beat her, because it's just that's how difficult the timing is to sort of figure out and get down and, like, okay, this is the weak button and blah, 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 blah. But once you get it, man, it's a very deep video gaming experience, I would say.
Yeah, it's really fun. But let's talk about not fun for a little bit here.
Oh, God, no, why? We were having so much fun.
I'm going to ruin it. All right, so there's a whole bunch of Fire Pro games. So let's talk about Suda 51. So Suda 51, if you don't know, is a fairly prolific Japanese developer of games like really odd games like Killer 7, No More Heroes. If you remember that, I think it was on Wii and then it came over to PS3. Do you guys ever play any of those games?
I played No More Heroes.
Yeah, great game, but it's crazy. Like, he's got that Kojima kind of mind of kind of insanity. And
Derangement.
Yeah, and before he kind of came up with a lot of stuff, he released a Fire Pro Wrestling game called Super Fire Pro Wrestling Special. Came out only in Japan, of course. So basically, the game was known for is it handled topics that you'd never really see in a wrestling game. So basically what happened is it had a full-on story mode, cutscenes and everything like that. So basically what happens is you start off like any other wrestling game, and you kind of work your way up and start wrestling. And so after you beat a few wrestlers, kind of weird things happen. So, like, one of the things that end up happening in the game is during a wrestling match with your tag team partner, you actually botch a move, and he dies. So you end up actually killing your partner during a wrestling match. And
sorry, I shouldn't be laughing, but that's so insanely dark.
Yes. And so that ended up making you kind of sad, and so you start losing a bunch of times, and then you start to buck up and you start winning. At that point where you start winning, a wrestler who does not like you decides to murder your coach, your wrestling coach, to try to get you off your game. And this just kind of screws your brain even more. At that point, you just kind of become distant, and you just kind of keep on wrestling. And during this whole string, your girlfriend leaves you. Because, of course, you know, you're not the same person that you were because you're depressed. So it ends up getting to the end of the game where you beat a wrestler to win the championship. And the game ends where you stand in the middle, you're in the middle of the ring, and it comes to a cutscene where everyone's kind of cheering for you. Then you realize that you're desperately alone, that no one cares about you unless you keep winning, and eventually you're not going to win. So the game ends with a scene of a house, which goes black to a gunshot. Essentially, basically what happens is the game ends with you shooting yourself in the head, killing yourself.
Okay.
And,
that's
pretty deep.
And I just want to add in on top of all this, the evil world champion who murders your coach is Ric Flair.
You gotta get Ric Flair, not it's like Dirk Stender or
Dick Splendor, I believe. Dick Splendor.
But
he is Ric Flair. So yeah, Ric Flair is the dirtiest player in the game, and he's also arranging murders to maintain his 17th world title, which you have to take from him. That's what makes Ric Flair the dirtiest player in the game. He murders your coach and then drives you to suicide if you do beat him, so that he can get that next title reign.
And it's one of the most ridiculous stories in wrestling, or in, well, not wrestling, in games. And this is 1994. It did, and even then it was kind of a big thing. But you can certainly tell why it never came out here. But it's certainly an interesting thing to think about, especially if you've never heard that story for that game. So, super crazy. Not much talk about gameplay-wise. It's still a great game because it's Fire Pro, but I don't know if you really need to learn about depression while doing it. But, hey, it just showed, you know, that it kind of showed that creativity is coming.
That's what these games make possible, though. They're an avenue for creativity.
Expand your mind, your imagination. But we should at least talk about what I would assume is Dave Meltzer's favorite wrestling game, which is Fire Pro. Yes, Fire Pro Wrestling Queen Special, which is one of the few licensed Fire Pro Wrestling games. It was a All Japan Women's game, actually. Mm. It was a lot like Fire Pro Wrestling Special, but you had women wrestler in it. It was all women's cast. There were no men in it. You could unlock, there's characters in it. I remember Bull Nakano was in it.
Minami Toyota, maybe?
Akira Hakuda was in it. Okay. That was my friend had this game. It was the only one I knew because she fought Medusa in WCW.
I can't ever pronounce her name right. Aja
Kong?
Yeah, is she in this game?
I think so. It had pretty much the full All Japan Women's roster from 94, as well as a bunch of, you know, fake wrestlers as well. But yeah, it was a really interesting game. Just as detailed as any other Fire Pro Wrestling games, but to have an all women's game that isn't like Rumble Roses style, which but it took itself completely seriously. In a sense, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a sexy game. It was just, you know, women's wrestling was so big then, and it's interesting to think about how big All Japan Women's was at the time.
Yeah. So that's the big thing about this game. It's a Fire Pro game, so you've played, you know, if you've played one of the Fire Pro games, it's not like there's anything revolutionary about the gameplay, but it is this interesting look into how popular women's wrestling was in mid-90s Japan, and probably before that. I mean, the Crush Girls were in the 80s, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
This is sort of a hallmark of what women's, of the potential popularity of women's wrestling. It's a Fire Pro game, so it's great. and it's fun to play with some of those characters because they would rarely show up in any other game. And And you don't have to do as much editing because they're all in it, you know. It is licensed.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating game because it shows you just how popular All Japan Women's was in the early 90s, because I think this was the period where they were selling out the... I don't know if they sold out the Tokyo Dome, but I know there were some big Tokyo Dome shows with the women back then.
Yeah, weren't they, like, co-promoting with, like, a men's wrestling? So, like, they were, like, the main reason people were coming.
Yeah, so I think it was like a 12th promotion show. I think Big Egg Universe. I remember that one. And there was a bunch of they were really popular back then. And to see them get their own Super Nintendo game, that was pretty amazing, because I didn't really hear about it until recently. So I'd love to try that game. It sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, and yeah, those games are all pretty big. They're all pretty cheap too, if you want to kind of grab them for like the Famicom.
The Super Famicom games are really cheap, from what I hear.
Yeah.
How expensive is it to buy a Famicom?
We don't even need to, like, it's just the only thing you really need to do for that is basically the only difference between the Famicom and Super Nintendo was in the Super Nintendo they had these little clips on each side.
Yeah.
Inside you can actually just kind of saw them off, but even like if you get like a Retron 5 or any of the clones,
I have one
Famicom systems, it works on there. And like I don't like the Retron 5 too much, but they do have translation patches and stuff on it.
Yeah, you can do translation patches. I know that one.
Yeah.
I mean,
sounds good.
I mean, it's kind of, I like the Retron 5. It's not like going to replace my Super Nintendo, but it has some things there that I couldn't get otherwise. So I like it.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially it sounds like better because I would never touch my Super Nintendo. It sits on a golden perch. It has lasted me for so many decades now. And I do not want that thing getting hurt, because I want to see how long it'll go without ever needing to be fixed. And we're now on its second decade of life. So
Mine still
works. I don't
want
to be taking any saws to it. So.
Mine still works, but I think I just switched the AC adapter, and that's it. It's going strong since 92.
Yeah.
The NES doesn't work anymore, though. I need the new new pin set or something.
My NES didn't even last. I got a Super Nintendo as a kid because my NES broke. So, that piece of shit. Well, it was back in hand, so whatever. Anyway.
That's fine. Yeah, I know we were actually... One of the other games we were on speak about was the FMW Famicom game, and I actually didn't finish playing it. So, let's hope with that next time.
Wait, there's the FMW
really dumb
game?
Fighting game, but...
There was an FMW game?
There was an FMW game.
Oh, wow.
Kind of... I need to replay it before I speak about it again. It won't take long because there's like three FMW wrestlers in it. but it that game did exist. There was an FMW game. It was like Street Fighter.
I'll try that one.
Let's end it off here with another arcade game from the World Wrestling Federation, which was WWF the arcade game, which was a Mortal Kombat-like rip-off.
It was a total rip-off.
Yeah. I went through the story mode a couple days ago, and it's all right. The issue with it is that it's all based on everyone's favorite match type to play, handicap matches.
Yeah.
And it's everyone just blocks and does crazy moves.
I wonder if I had played this game primarily in the arcade if I would have liked it more, because I had the Super Nintendo port of this game. Which meant I didn't get all the people. I did not get Bam Bam and Yoko. I had the other six. Interesting that Diesel wasn't in this game. In fact, Kevin Nash has given interviews where this still pisses him off that he's not in this game, because he was the world champion at the time, and he didn't get a wrestling video game check for being in this.
Well, that's weird though. It came out right as he was champion, wasn't he?
Yeah, and he played this as part of his reason for leaving. So he's like, man, they weren't even putting me in the video game. They didn't give a shit about me.
That's weird.
But if you're playing it at home, like I did, it's just really repetitive, really, really boring. It's pretty because the wrestling, it's like that Mortal Kombat style. It's all digitized. So
yeah.
Everybody looks like themselves, which was amazing to be playing on a Super Nintendo. But... It's just a really, really repetitive game and it's not, there's not really much depth to it, and like I said, if you're playing this in arcade, you might enjoy it, but then again, I think if you're playing this in arcade, you'd be comparing it to other good arcade games that you'd rather play. You know, if you're sitting in an arcade and you want to play this, or you want to play actual Mortal Kombat where you can rip somebody's skull out. I think I know which game I'm choosing. Not going to be WrestleMania, so, yeah, but you could do the super kick, so it had that advantage over the other WWF games. You can actually super kick somebody.
Yeah, I played the sequel for Windows, which was In Your House, and that was the first video game, wrestling video game I actually played. And it's, like you said, it's repetitive. I kind of like the graphics. It's kind of goofy. It's very much what you would expect from a 1995 goofy WWF kind of game. But, you know, as somebody who liked the Mortal Kombat games as a kid, I mean, that seeing the digitized graphics with all the WWF guys was pretty cool. But,
I feel like the big highlight of this game was Vince McMahon's commentary.
Yeah.
This was a debacle! Or just something insane, yeah. Where you're like, how is that? It's like, what?
Yeah, it's creepy.
No, my favorite part about In Your House was you could put it in a CD player and it would play everybody's theme song. That was really cool.
Yeah, those were old games, CD-ROM games.
Yeah.
Now, the gameplay doesn't have a lot to talk about, but I really will end off this part by going through a couple of the endings to the game. Because the endings of the game are the most well-known parts of it. I don't know. You guys played the Super Nintendo one, so you definitely didn't get them. But so
yeah, I don't know what you're even talking about. Amazing.
I've heard about them, but I don't remember them.
They're all really, really great. Now I'll probably read a couple out story time style, but most of them are just better off to just talk about them. So basically, Midway wrote text endings for each one when they won the WWF Championship. The thing was, I don't think anyone really knew anything about wrestling, so everything they wrote is just completely bonkers. So some of them are, like, just weird. Like, Bret Hart becomes, a Western star in Italy, and he gains a bunch of awards and becomes, like, a Broadway singer.
That almost happened. There's an alternate universe where
Lomas Dove
became the hit show of all the summers. Okay. And Bret Hart became a huge television star, the next Clint Eastwood.
Some of them are simple, like Lex Luger goes on a Broadway tour, The Undertaker sucks the souls out of
it. Why is everyone going on Broadway in this game?
I don't know. I dreamed a dream
of WWF titles. Like, what is happening here?
Some of them are injured. Like, there's a couple, like, one, like, Bam Bam Bigelow ends where he gains superpowers, and he, like, he blows up the arena with all the people in it. And he kills everyone but himself, and it's ending him with the WWF title. There's one where Doink beats the game by when he ends, and he gets a bunch of circus animals to come through and tramples past the crowd. And he kills most of them, but the other half were having fun, so Doink's happy.
Cool.
Razor Ramon goes to and opens up a pawn shop in Mexico and then disappears.
Mexico. What? I don't think they knew what kind of fake Latino he was.
It's true. I'll read one. And I'll read the Shawn Michaels one.
This is my hero that you are reading the story of.
Shawn Michaels. My favorite wrestler, Shawn Michaels.
This is the greatest wrestler of all time. This is the kid that got me into WWF. Yes. Let me hear what happens when you win with Shawn Michaels.
Yeah. So he just won the title, you know. Timeline, WWF title, 1985. Shawn stuttered around the ring arrogantly for several minutes, flexing and chewing his gum, an obnoxious smirk on his face. He always bragged that he was the greatest thing to grace the World Wrestling Federation, and now he's finally proven it. The ladies in the audience reached out their arms to him and screamed his name. With that, he thought he'd be cute by teasing with a little hip action. The ladies,
this is taking a dark turn.
Yes. I was getting to it. The ladies in an uncontrollable lust crazed frenzy stampede the ring like cattle, trying to get a hold of him. Sean scrambled to escape the clutches of the horde, but to no avail. They quickly cornered him and proceeded to ravage him mercilessly.
What?
Wow.
When they were through, Sean was left motionless, sans his clothing and some hair. It was a big old grin stamped on his face. He loved the attention, and more so, he loved the women. His craving for attention to all the women led him to leave the wrestling and become a politician where he gets his fellow's vote.
What?
So not okay. only does Shawn Michaels end anywhere he gets raped, and then he becomes a politician to go hang with prostitutes. So not only is there rape, but there's a little bit of political statement in there as well.
Hey, satire, Bill Clinton, look it up. Monica Lewinsky.
This was 1990, like.
White water. That's amazing.
Yeah.
And with that, 50 Shades of Grey level geek. That's basically our show, and we think everyone all tingly for the end of it here. Next week, we're going to go on, we're going to talk about all the stuff that's going on there, talk about a bit of news, and then probably the week after, or there, we're going to get looking at the 3D games, so we're going to look at the SmackDown games, all the WCW games, which I have some opinions on that people aren't going to like, and
we're also going to talk about the Hall of Fame sometime this month. We're going to talk about the candidates and who we would vote for and things like that, because yep. I know there's a lot of contention about some of the bigger stars that haven't been voted in yet, you know, like Sting, Big Daddy, Carlos Colon in? I don't think he got in last year.
Yeah.
But,
I got the ballot.
Yeah. He's off the ballot?
I don't know. We'll have to check that. We'll want to do a bit more research there next week. Also, just if anyone came to us, if we went kind of through most of the 2D games, if there's any 2D games you've thought of that we haven't, feel free to give us a buzz.
Our Twitter is FirePro Podcast.
Yep, and we always have a comment section everywhere. See, there's a comment section on FGuarded. We post this on FRW.com as well, so you can always post in the comment sections there. And just let us know. And if you have any, you know, comments, concerns, any ideas for what you guys want to talk about, let us know for there. But that's basically it for now. We'll figure what's going on next week. We'll maybe look at some news, like I said. We'll look at all the things. Hall of Fame's coming up. We still have a lot of wrestling talk. And we haven't forgotten about WCW 2000, even if I wish we
had. The big reboot is coming.
The reboot is coming, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's basically the show for now, and we'll leave it off here. So until next time, I'm Brad.
I'm Brian.
I'm Ben.
And we'll see you soon.
Bye!
Beep.